I hope anybody's not stupid enough to write us off.
Hello and welcome to Two Stars, the Nottingham Forest podcast from The Athletic. Every week we delve into all the big stories regarding the two-time European champions in the company of The Athletic's Men in the Know. On this episode, we're rounding up the news from the international break, we'll look ahead to the weekend game against Barnsley, and in a special three-for-one deal, we'll ask, did they really Gioacre for Forest? Available for free wherever you get your pods and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Two Stars. Yes, hello listener, Matt Davis-Adams here to guide you through another week in the life of the world's greatest football club. Later, we'll be joined by The Athletic senior writer Daniel Taylor to discuss the spectacularly unsuccessful Italian trio signed by David Platt. First though, let's say a big hello to The Athletic's Forest correspondent Paul Taylor. Hi Paul.
Good morning, how are we doing?
Really well, thank you. Alongside Paul, the incomparable Nick Miller. How are you doing, Nick?
Oh, that's nice. That's because that could mean anything, really. It could mean incomparable in a good way, could mean incomparable in a bad way. But, you know, I think we'll leave the listeners to decide what that actually means.
Well, I've used it because it's a word that was often used to describe Shawn Michaels, a.k.a. the Heartbreak Kid, one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time. So I often think of you and he in the same category.
Yeah, come on, Matt, let's not ruin this. Let's not ruin this by talking about wrestling.
Before we start, we're going to be reminiscing on the inglorious Forest careers of Salvatore Macchicano, Gianluca Petracchi and Moreno Mannini later. It begs the question, according to the stats site Transfermarkt, those three account for half of the Italians to have played for Forest. Can you name the other three? I'll let you go one each. Paul, you can have the first guess.
Oh, Andrea Salenzi.
Yes, that's a standout one really, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd be stuck beyond that, so good luck, Nick.
Yeah, I was too until I looked it up. Nick, can you offer any more?
Yeah. Well, I think... I can't remember his first name actually, but one of the Dimitriou, was that his name?
The great winger
who signed there was great excitement because I think he played for Napoli at one point and then he played about three times and disappeared without a trace.
He declared that he was going to be the next Oliver Burke in his first interview.
Well, that's sort of panned out as was.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Fairly accurate. Nicolai Dimitriou came on loan from Napoli. He's actually the most recent player that Forest have signed from an Italian club since those three that Platt signed, you know, well over a decade later, nearly 20 years later. Paul, there's one more to get. I'll be very, very impressed if you can get it.
I'll be honest, I've got absolutely no clue.
Can you give us a clue what kind of era are we talking here?
We're talking fairly recent era. I think Fawaz era loan signing. One of those that you go, oh, him, he kicked around in the Premier League for a bit, so he was bound to have an underwhelming spell at Forest.
I'm thinking that kind of slightly odd clutch of players that signed when Montagnier was manager, something like that, around then. I'm struggling to come up with a name.
Used to play for Manchester United.
Oh the striker. Yes. Was at Doncaster as well. I can picture his face.
Scored on his Man United debut. It was yes. A winner. Nobody had ever heard of him up until this point, or very few.
He dined out on that goal for ages, didn't he?
Hang on, Makeda?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Makeda played for Forest. What?
Yes. Federico Makeda. Yeah. There you go. There's next week's He Played for Forest. Sorted nicely.
This is our pod prep in real time.
Three games, according to Wikipedia, in 2016 on loan. My goodness me. Loans at Sampdoria, Queen's Park Rangers, Stuttgart, Doncaster twice, Birmingham. He's now at Panathinaikos. Anyway, not many Italians in the history of Nottingham Forest Football Club by the looks of things. I'm sure you got all three of those right, listener. Now we're going to go on to internationals. So So no Forest action last weekend, but there were some Reds players involved with their countries over the break. Cyrus Christie played an hour of Ireland's 3-0 defeat to England at Wembley. He didn't get off the bench in their Nations League defeat to Wales. He then appeared as a very late substitute in the goalless draw with Bulgaria. Harry Arter didn't feature, but did manage to pick up an injury in training and was sent home early. Paul, have we got any indication how serious this is? And is it a concern that he seems to be picking up a lot of knocks at the start of his Forest career?
The club say that he's fine, that it was just a small problem and he was basically sent home as a precaution, and then they expect him to be available to be part of the squad that faces Barnsley. We've got the press conference later on with Chris Hughton, so I'll certainly ask him there for an update, but the suggestion was that there was not a lot of concern about Arter's long-term fitness, and they expect him to be available, thankfully.
Okay, that's good news. Tendai Dirikwe played twice for Zimbabwe as they had a doubleheader against Algeria in qualifying for the African Cup of Nations. Nicholas Ioannou didn't much enjoy his time away with Cyprus. He started all three of their games, a friendly defeat to Greece, a limp 2-1 Nations League win against Luxembourg, and a 4-0 hammering to Montenegro, also in the Nations League. Better news for Scott McKenna. Didn't get off the bench in Scotland's penalty shootout win in Serbia that saw them qualify for the Euros, but he still got the chance to show that, yes, he can boogie. He then played the full 90 in the subsequent Nations League defeat to Slovakia at the weekend, came off the bench for 17 minutes in Wednesday's defeat to Israel. Finally, tip of the hat to on loan Brennan Johnson, made his senior debut for Wales as a sub in their 0-0 friendly with the USA. Nick, do you think that McKenna and Ioannou's involvement mean they're less likely to feature at the weekend?
Possibly. I'm not sure whether, I mean, Forest now have a sort of surfeit of left backs, so it's possible that, you know, either the freshly reintroduced into the fold Ribeiro might play, or Gaetan Bong. So, I mean, this is what the problem was last season. Forrest didn't have options, but now Hughton does have. He has choices. You know, the thing we always say is an attack, but now we've got options to kind of play in defence. So, if you know, even if they are tired, having come back from international duty, and you know, Hughton doesn't want to stretch them out too much in what is going to be another bonkers run of games over the next few weeks, then he's got the option, and you know, it might not be the first choice, but we've got players who can sort of fill in for the first choice players.
And actually, Paul, I was going to say Chris Hughton will be relieved that there are no more international breaks till March. But unlike some other national team managers and their players, the Forest lads have been managed quite well by the looks of it. You know, very few of them have played a full 90 minutes three times in the space of the last week. So they shouldn't come back feeling too fatigued.
No, exactly. And I think Scott McKenna will certainly play, just purely because he seems to have built up quite a good relationship with Tobias Figueiredo, and I'd be surprised if he wasn't involved, particularly with Joe Worrall still being injured. He's not expected to be back for a few weeks yet. So McKenna's been one of the standout performers amongst the new signings. So I'd be surprised if he wasn't involved. Ribeiro more likely to start, I think, at left back, purely because he's done pretty well since being brought back in from the Chile cabinet.
Yeah, that's the trip against Barnsley coming up on Saturday. We'll preview that next. So it's a visit to Oakwell for the Reds this weekend as Forest take on a Barnsley side who've already dumped them out of the League Cup this season and played a big part in Forest failing to make the playoffs last term, although the Reds' own ineptitude played a far bigger part in that particular calamity. As Paul points out in his piece assessing Chris Hughton's Forest, this is the start of a run of 12 games in 42 days for the Reds. Before we look ahead to this game specifically, it's been announced this week that EFL clubs will be permitted to make 5 substitutions per game for the rest of the season. Nick, do you think this is a good idea, first of all? But secondly, it's going to be a bigger benefit to Forest than to most other Championship clubs, isn't it, given the gargantuan squad that we're currently working with?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there are two ways of looking at whether this is a good thing or not. One, in a sort of objective fairness, which it probably isn't, particularly in the Championship when, you know, squads are thinner in terms of quality and just in terms of numbers. But the other way of looking at it is it's brilliant for Forest because we have this colossal squad of players. And, you know, like I was saying before, there are so many options now for, you know, in attack, in sort of central midfield. Maybe slightly less so at the moment in central defence, but certainly I think for bigger teams with bigger resources, and Forest are obviously one of those in the Championship, then it's good news.
Paul, I was quite anti this when it was mooted to come back into the Premier League this season, but I guess the counter argument, other than the fact that we like things that favour Forest, is that the integrity of the competition is not really there anyway, is it? Because of the fact there are no supporters, but there might then be at a later stage of the season some supporters. It's one of those seasons where that argument about integrity is not really going to hold much water.
No, and I think you've got to think about player welfare as well, haven't you? When you look at the fact that there is so many, I mean, you mentioned the ridiculous figure there. Was it 12 in 42? That's a lot of games to be playing for any professional footballer. It's telling that when he first took over, Chris Hughton didn't actually make that many substitutions. It was only one or two here and there. But in the last three games, he's actually used all three subs that are available to him. So it'll be interesting to see if that kind of policy is maintained and if he does take advantage of being able to use all five in every game. I guess there'll be a lot of logic to that as they go through a demanding run of fixtures like that. You know, Forest do have one or two injuries to deal with at the minute. You know, Arter's got a problem, Worrell's coming back, Grabban's had issues of his own, and you don't want that to get to a position where it starts to impact on the team, and the best way of doing that is to ensure you're not, you know, asking too much of individual players. I know Lyle Taylor was left out of the side recently because they were concerned that they were putting too much burden of pressure on his shoulders to play every game. So I think you're likely to see a bit of rotation, but also the substitutions will be used. You're right, this season there isn't, it's different, isn't it? The whole circumstance surrounding football and life at the minute has changed the dynamic hugely, but I think this is one area and one decision they've made that's probably a positive one in every sense.
To Saturday's game then, Forest back-to-back wins, only one defeat in seven since Chris Hughton took charge. They come into it in decent shape then, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like things have slowly started to come together under Hughton. To begin with, not a lot changed. It felt like it was a very similar approach to what we'd seen under Sabri Lamouchi, but slowly you're starting to see Forest evolve under Chris Hughton, and a few different nuances come to the fore. They're not exactly the same team. They play a very similar formation. They start as having a starting point of being solid at the back, but they're a little bit more ambitious going forward. They certainly try and keep possession a lot more than Sabri Lamouchi's side did. And you know, they go into this game on the back of two wins. Very fortunate to beat Coventry. Got the job done against Wickham. They definitely deserve to win that game. And they'll go into this one hoping to prove a point at Barnsley, where the last two visits, the high point has been the little bag of sweets they give the media just before the game.
And you won't even be getting that this time.
Well, no, it's COVID friendly sweets, apparently. They've been very good. So, yeah, hopefully that won't be the highlight this time when we head to Oakwell.
Are we talking sort of wine gums, the sort of chewier sweet, or something from the Haribo collection, or more old school than that even?
If we want to go into specifics, there was a bag of Haribo and then some old school like 10p mix we used to have when we were kids. It was like that, you know, indigo violets and fruit salads and stuff like that. You know, we're easily pleased as media lot. Give us a bag of sweets now, happy camper.
That's a lovely touch, isn't it? And it's also kind of peak journalist that you've, Paul, clearly sort of check this out in advance. You've been asking the question whether the sweets are going to be available this time. You've got to respect that kind of dedication to the craft.
I'll be honest, I miss my pies. I don't see why we can't have a COVID friendly pie if you can have a COVID friendly bag of sweets. But you know, we're lucky. We get to go to games, and I think that every time I get to go to a football match, I feel bad for fans that aren't able to be there, and it doesn't feel the same without fans there. It just, the atmosphere isn't there, and I hope we get to a point very soon where great to have fans back in the stadium on any level at all, because it's football's just not the same without them.
Nope, but it looks as though there might be some movement on that before too long, hopefully.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hello, I'm Ian McIntosh, and despite literally spending months of my life playing Football Manager, I'm still terrible at it. That's why I'm launching the Football Manager Show, the latest podcast from The Athletic. Every week, I'll speak to the people who know the game best, the people who make the game. We'll take a proper look at things like training, recruitment, and tactics. We'll try to answer your questions. We'll do everything we can to keep you eager to play just one more game and altogether less inclined to quit without saving. The era of Cherno and Tonton and dear sweet Michael Duff is over. The new Football Manager is bigger, better, more challenging than ever. And I need some help. If you do too, you can subscribe now. Just look for the Football Manager Show by The Athletic, wherever you get all your other podcasts. It starts in November, and knowing my track record, I'll be unemployed by December.
Nick, why are Forest so bad in front of goal away from home this season? They've only scored two goals, failed to find the net in four of six, and in fact, they've only won once on the road, that at Ewood Park in Houghton's first game in charge.
I think it's obviously partly a consequence of the start of the season, the new kind of group of players gelling together. It's obviously kind of taken a while for the sort of front four to kind of, you know, settle and get used to each other a bit more. I think that is something that we've seen a bit of an improvement of in the last few games. Obviously, Lyle Taylor's scored a few goals, and Knockhart has shown a few moments of promise. But I think once those players kind of get used to each other a bit more and gel as a bit more of an attacking unit, then that might improve. I think we've talked about this before. Perhaps slightly surprisingly, Houghton seems to have tried to implement a more kind of positive style of play. We were obviously very used to the sort of relatively slow, patient build-up that Sabri Mucci had. Houghton seems to be changing that quite, gradually. And, perhaps that will bear fruit in a few more goals in the next few games.
Yeah, might not be at Oakwell though. Forest record there, not very good. Beaten on their last three visits. Most recent two of those have come within the last 4 months. Last time Forest picked up 3 points from a trip to this part of Yorkshire, Henry Lansbury scored a hat-trick and Apostolos Velios also scored. That said though, it's not the same Barnsley that started the season. They got a new manager. Gerhard Struber decided Brooklyn was preferable to Barnsley. Valerian Ismail now in charge. A fairly underwhelming replacement on the face of it, Nick, but he's had a great start.
Yeah, 3 wins out of the first 4 games. I mean, you can add caveats to those 3 wins. The first one, I think, was against QPR when they had a man sent off quite early on. The last one was against Derby, so, easy pickings there. But I think they only won maybe one or two league games before that. They've certainly picked up. It's interesting that he doesn't seem to have changed an enormous amount. I think there was a sort of a brief spell after Struble left where Adam Murray was in caretaker charge, and I think the performances picked up but the results they were getting a lot of draws, and maybe it's just been a sort of gradual improvement. He kind of seems to implement a similar style of play to Struber, this quite sort of aggressive, high pressing system, which doesn't necessarily suit their latest rumoured transfer target, which I'm sure we'll get onto in a minute. It's a similar formation. It's a kind of variant on a 3-4-3. Alex Mauer is the kind of man to watch out for. He's been superb recently. He scored an absolute thriker against Watford a few weeks ago. So it'd be interesting to see if Houghton sort of picks the team with keeping Mauer quiet in mind. So, if fit, hopefully Harry Arter might come back in to just keep an eye on him. So, yeah, I mean, it is obviously difficult to see Barnsley carrying on this kind of, very strong form. But in recent weeks, certainly they've looked very impressive.
Paul, we're going to talk about this trio of Italians that didn't do very well for David Platt at Forest. But I think if Barnsley can manage to sign Mario Balotelli, that would be a trump card in terms of Italians playing in the Championship. Is there any chance that will happen, do you think?
I think, didn't he play for Nice under Barnsley's current owners? Is that where the link came from? It's something like
that,
I think.
That's what the link is. The current co-chairman was involved at Nice when Balotelli was there. Yeah.
So you wonder if there might be a very slim chance of it, but it feels it would be somehow typically Forest if the opposition made an outstanding signing like that shortly before the game. But I can't see it happening. Can you imagine him turning out at Hopewell? I like Hopewell. It's like a proper old-fashioned football stadium, but it doesn't feel quite like the stage on which somebody like Balotelli would perform, does it? It would be a truly outstanding story, and part of me hopes it happens, but hopefully after Saturday, because I don't want him playing against Forest and you know, doing any damage.
He doesn't really seem to fit the, you know, high energy, high pressing style that Barnsley have been trying to play. Ishmael said, I think it was last week at some point, when he was asked about free agent targets, he said it's not easy because you can only take free agents, so the players are not fit and to play the football I want to. You need 100% fitness. I want to have the feeling a guy is 100% ready for my philosophy. It doesn't scream Balotelli, that, does it? I mean, it would be enormously entertaining to have Balotelli at Oakwell, but it doesn't seem to.
It doesn't
be
even whisper Balotelli, does it?
Not really, no.
Let's hope that Balotelli's not put off if he scrolls through Emmanuel Frimpong's Twitter feed. You'll remember when he signed for Barnsley from Arsenal, he tweeted, "How am I going to draw girls now?" followed by three crying face emojis. Any excuse to mention that? Finally on the game then, Paul, you know, Barnsley come into it ahead of Forest in the table, but with our sort of slight sense of entitlement, I think we're looking at this that as a game that 3 points would be a good result, 1 point maybe not so much. Is that realistic?
Yeah, I don't want to harp on too much about saying Chris Hughton's had a steady improvement, but I think they've won one, drawn one and lost one away from home, and there's been signs of progress. But yes, to answer your question, they probably need to be going there thinking they want to take 3 points just to continue that improvement, and more importantly, send out the message that yes, they do intend to be fighting it out at the top end of the table rather than looking over their shoulders at the relegation zone. I think what they've done in recent weeks is suggest very much that Forest fans can still look towards the rest of the season with optimism. But if they were to lose on Saturday, then the mood would change very quickly again, as it has a habit of doing at Forest. More to the point, they also go to Bournemouth after this, and that's going to be a very difficult game. So if they could win on Saturday, it would give them a little bit of leeway to perhaps think that a point would be a good result at Bournemouth. So 3 points on Saturday, please, and let the sweets not just be the highlight of the game.
What do you think, Nicky? Are you thinking we're gonna get a win here?
Well, I mean, I'm going to speak from a kind of emotional fan perspective, and as you mentioned earlier on, there is some fairly recent trauma at Barnsley, so I'm from that perspective, I'm not enormously optimistic, and I suppose the form that Barnsley have been in recently, there is some logical reason to be a bit pessimistic. I actually think, I mean, I sort of simultaneously agree with everything you and Paul have just said, but also think that a point might actually be a decent result. You know, given as we've mentioned, Forest struggles scoring goals away from home, the recent history at Barnsley, and how well Barnsley have been playing recently.
Okay, 3 p.m. Saturday, the kickoff time for that one. We will, of course, react to the match in next week's show. Last stop for us today. Did they really play for Forest?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Now then, if late 90s indie group The Seahorses are to be believed, 1999 was a hell of a year. Not for Forest though, they had David Platt in charge, you see, and it turns out he was an absolutely terrible manager. As well as displaying gross tactical ineptitude, he also made some truly dreadful signings, the most ignominious of which were arguably the three Italian players who followed Platt to the City Ground. Salvatore Matricano, Gianluca Petracchi and Moreno Manini were their names. Joining us now to discuss the unsuccessful trio is The Athletic senior writer and Forest fan Daniel Taylor. Hi Danny, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Are you?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Can you remember your initial reactions when news of this triple signing broke? Were you excited or sceptical?
I was excited, I think. It was always quite exciting, especially sort of back in those days, to have, you know, Italian, big Italian names coming to your club, and it was all very new. And I think, obviously, you know, I was a lot younger than I think if it was now, I'd be looking at it thinking, I think the big thing was that David Platt was in his early 30s at that time, and just that he was so young. I think that, you know, that is probably his biggest mitigation, that there aren't that many successful managers of the, you know, at the age of 32 around. And but at that time, I don't recall that being like hugely spoken about, whereas now perhaps I think I'd be a lot more sceptical about it at work. But I think the reaction at the time was, you know, it was a new era, and I don't think we saw how badly it possibly might go.
Paul, you were on the other side of the trend at this time. Can you remember sort of casting envious glances over the river, or were you thinking, I know how this is going to turn out?
He was always envious.
I think the latter, if we're entirely honest. You know, when even as somebody who knows a little bit about football, you haven't heard about half of these players, you start to worry that they might not be the brightest buttons in the box, and so it proved to be. It was not the most illustrious of signings that Nottingham Forest ever made, was it?
No, probably not the worst though either. So Salvatore Matricano, centre-half signed from Perugia in a joint deal with Gianluca Petracchi, $2.4 million for the pair of them, and Moreno Manini, who came in from Sampdoria, where he played alongside David Platt. And Nick Manini had a really, really good CV, certainly compared to the other two, but he was pretty much shot by the time he arrived.
Yeah, he. One of my first impressions was that he looked like, you know, in Ghostbusters 2, the guy that comes out of the painting.
Yeah, good shout.
He looked exactly like him, so that wasn't my sort of most amazing first impression. But yeah, he played for Sampdoria for quite a long time. He was in the team that the Sampdoria team in the 1992 European Cup final that lost to Barcelona. Alongside Ivano Benetti, weirdly, in that team. He was also one of the reasons that Des Walker's spell at Sampdoria didn't go particularly well, because Sven-Göran Eriksson, who was the manager at the time, decided that Des was... he had a load of players who could play at centre-back and no full-backs, and he decided that Manini was a better bet at centre-half than Walker, so Walker played at right-back and left-back and all over the place, I think. But yeah, theoretically, Manini was, you know, he had a good reputation behind him, but unfortunately he was, you know, 62 or however old he was by the time he got to Forest and couldn't really run.
Yeah, he was 37. Our friend Daniel Stories just tweeted us, "I vaguely recall that you being Nick, and your dad took me to Main Road for the 1-0 defeat. Manini was so slow that people were openly laughing about it in the away end." Danny, Salvatore Matricano actually looked like a decent player, but he was just unlucky. 13 games in, he gets injured, and that was it for him.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, when I was, you know, going home and away... back as much as I could in those days. I'd actually just moved up to Manchester in 1998. So I kind of, and I was I was working up in the Northwest and doing a lot of games then, so I actually couldn't get to as many games as I was previously. So I kind of maybe timed that well, judging by everything I was sort of hearing from my mates that were at the games. But I did go to, I remember going to Crewe away and seeing a pretty terrible performance and Tony Vaughan getting sent off. And it just, you know, very quickly became apparent that it wasn't going to work, basically. And I mean, as Nick says, these guys weren't, you know, they weren't bums. They were, but, and I suppose maybe if I can, you know, because there's obviously going to be a fair bit of Platt bashing in this, just to try and provide a little bit of balance. I actually, you know, actually went to do an interview with David Platt a few months ago, and just maybe, you know, maybe a few of my kind of assumptions about how he would be were sort of were removed in that interview. You know, he was really, really open about the fact that in I won't swear here, but, you know, that he'd cocked up. It wasn't the expression he used himself, but he basically talked about he'd made some really bad decisions. He did say the Italians were actually, you know, they were actually, they weren't over expensive, is what he said. You know, one of them was a free transfer. You know, they were on lowish salaries, he said. But what struck me, and again, you know, don't get me wrong, when I was watching that team, you know, I wasn't very happy with it, so I don't want to be too two-faced here, but he really did hold up his hands more than usual football people do. You know, football people love an excuse, and apart from basically saying that he was too young and naive, he just put it all on his own shoulders and basically said that, he'd made some really bad decisions, not just with these Italians, but he was talking about just losing the trust of players and spending badly, and if he could do everything again, he would do it all differently. You know, he talked about up front he had Dougie Friedman, and that he lost the trust of Dougie Friedman by putting in Marlon Harewood, and then Harewood was young and basically didn't do enough to sort of keep his place, so we'd take him out, and so in the end he'd lose the trust of both of them rather than having. So it was quite not eye-opening, but it was quite interesting just because I'm used to interviewing football people and they've always got an excuse, and it was quite nice to actually sit with someone and actually to hear them say, you know what, I absolutely balls that up. And he suffered for it, because he talked about, you know, on one occasion putting his CV in for another job, and it wasn't really a CV, it was more of a sort of a plan of, you know, what he thought about football, and he didn't even get a reply. And he, being the person he is, he basically got in touch with the club, and, you know, they appointed somebody else, and he sort of asked them why. And they, you know, why he hadn't even sort of merited a reply. And they basically just said, look, you know, just look at your time at Forest, you know. So it's quite hard when you know, it's quite a hard stain for him to sort of wash out of his reputation, really.
So, Paul, if we look back at that, can we maybe ascribe some blame to Nigel Doughty and Mark Arthur? Were they perhaps a little bit enthralled to David Platt, and they should have either reined him in or got somebody in to help and advise him in what was, you know, his first proper managerial role? He'd had that brief spell in Italy.
Well, yeah, absolutely. There is a common conception that's absolutely the case, that they just gave him too much free rein to spend the kind of money that some of his predecessors would probably have benefited from. You know, there was a time when Forest could have strengthened prior to that, and they didn't, when they could have been more supportive of other managers. And then Platt comes in, and they I wouldn't say they absolutely splashed the cash, but they're a bit willy-nilly with their spending, and it didn't really work out, did it? To echo what Danny said, bizarrely, even though I was covering Notts County at the time, I did go and interview David Platt when he was Forest manager at the time, and the main memory that stands out is a very curious one. And I sat with him for a good half an hour, maybe 25 minutes, and he spent the entire time with both hands down the front of his trousers, just having a good old fashioned rummage. And then I was left
with
the most.
Was he looking at you at this time, Paul?
Very, very adoringly, yes. At the end of it, I was faced with the most awful quandary I've had as a young sports journalist when he reached out his hand to shake my hand. And I didn't know what to do. For about 5 seconds, I was faced with the most stark decision of my young journalistic career. And I just sort of said, I'm really sorry, David, but I know where you've had your hand for the last half hour. And thankfully, he just sort of laughed and you know, let me off shaking his hand, because I knew where it had been. But at the time, he was quite... I remember talking to him about the three Italians at that point, and he was very... very open and honest. I can't remember exactly what he said, because it was years ago, but I remember him then being quite open and honest about the decisions he'd made, and he was a very affable, friendly character. He just didn't really do a very good job of managing Nottingham Forest, did he?
he fell out with Larry Lloyd, didn't he? I think he had a massive. I think Larry Lloyd would just slaughter him in the.
Oh yeah.
For radio and
he banned him.
I think Darren Fletcher got on with David Platt. In fact, when I did the interview with Platt, Darren got in touch to sort of, you know, just to see how he was doing. So they obviously got on, but I think Larry Lloyd very quickly upset him by, you know, Larry was very outspoken and quite funny with it a lot of the time, and I think there was how I heard it was that there was some sort of ultimatum of if that radio station was basically going to continue covering Forest and getting access, that Larry Lloyd was going to have to go. So I think Larry left and was very hurt by that experience. But actually, I think Platt actually got on with the local media otherwise.
Yeah, it was Century 106. I was making cups of tea for them during that season. We've got a tweet from AD, which I simply must read out, regarding Larry Lloyd on the three Italians. He said, "One's older than me, one's slower than me, and the other one has the size of a pea." I think one of them, the size of a pea, might be Gianluca Petracchi, Nicky, who we haven't really spoken about too much. Now, I remembered him as the best of the three, kind of tricky winger, but looking back on his spell, he only played 15 games, didn't manage a goal. And this week he's been talking about his time at Forest, and it's fair to say he doesn't reflect on it too fondly.
Yeah, he was giving it, Petracchi has sort of carved out a career for himself as a director, as kind of sporting director in Italy. I kind of first connected the dots when he was the guy who signed Joe Hart for Torino, and he then moved on to Roma, where it didn't go brilliantly, I don't think, and he gave an interview to Corriere dello Sport where he was asked about his relationship with Roma's American owner, or former owner Jim Pallotta, and their sort of communication between the two. And he said, "I don't speak English. I'm lazy. But then again, I don't have a good memory of my time in England. I was injured and they thought I was bluffing. They called me an Italian mafia member. There was racism, but speaking Italian was a matter of pride for me." So, I mean, it kind of sounds like he almost didn't learn English as a point of principle, which I sort of loosely have to respect on a kind of very petty level. But yeah, like you said, he looked pretty decent for a few months, and then he kind of constantly got injured, and you know, as he suggested, maybe people didn't quite believe that he was injured all the time, but from there his career sort of petered out a little bit.
Yeah, Gary tweeted us to point as in the direction of a standout Petracchi performance. I remember being at the City Ground for this one, actually. 4-1 win against Walsall. A win against Walsall. Forest goal scorers that day, Ian Wright, a Steve Chettle pen, and a Dougie Friedman brace. Other tweets that we've had, Forza Garibaldi puts on tin hat, clears throat, nervously utters, "Matracano was a good player. The injury at Port Vale meant he was tossed in with the other two as a terrible signing. Don't think he ever played again. Real shame. Manini made Nicky Eden look like Usain Bolt." Sam says, "I remember getting that season's edition of Championship Manager and being dumbfounded by their wages. I was only 13, but I knew we were on the road to ruin." And finally, Maxim laments, "Went to Portman Road for the 99-00 season opener, fully confident we'd make an immediate return to the top flight. Unfortunately, all three of them started the game. We were thoroughly underwhelming and we lost 3-1. Danny, what do you think that the legacy of these signings were? Did it mean that Forest did tighten the purse strings a little bit? It certainly felt like that was the case once Platt left and Paul Hart took over.
Yeah, well, Paul Hart is always the person I've felt sorry for, really. I mean, there was the point when after we reached the playoffs, that was really the time that everyone wanted Forest to build. And I think at that time, Forest just wouldn't give him the money that he wanted. I think there were some promises made that he felt were, that he was badly let down on. And when, you know, and eventually sort of Paul Hart started thinking that he needed to leave. And then, you know, I think he spoke to West Ham. Leeds were looking at him for a while, and everything sort of unravelled, as it often tends to do with Forest. Once you sort of get close, it's amazing how many times it sort of then quickly unravels. So yeah, so I think that was always one of the, you know, it was always held against Platt that basically it was because of his time there that we've suffered since. I mean, he actually said, just going back to when I met him, he actually said, you know, "I still feel sometimes I get blamed for what's happening now." That was him talking, not me, but. So yeah, so his legacy, you know, he's. I mean, he accepts this. He's remembered as probably on a long list of, you know, very bad managers Forest have had in the last 25 years. He's remembered as sort of pretty predominant on that list.
Without wishing to turn this into a kind of let's all defend David Platt podcast, but a while ago, in one of my more self-indulgent moments, I thought I was going to write a piece about the Italians. So I interviewed Alan Rogers about sort of playing with them. Now, perhaps unsurprisingly, Alan Rogers didn't really remember much about the Italians. He had to kind of be prompted as to what their names were. But what the one thing he did say, and I think he said this on in other interviews as well, he said that Platt was a brilliant coach. He was kind of years ahead of his time in some of his methods, and he was very good at sort of getting the best out of some players. And it just, like Danny mentioned earlier on, he just made a few mistakes which kind of undermined his kind of tenure there. And from there, it was, you know, he was there for two seasons and it never really recovered. But Rogers said, and I think some other people who were around at the time as well, he was actually a really good coach, and in some respects it was a shame that it didn't work out for him at Forest.
Well, there you go. I thought we would spend 10 minutes or so lamenting the fact that David Platt was once Forest manager. Instead, maybe we should be getting him back. Maybe not.
Let's not go too far.
Danny, before we let you go, let's plug your latest piece for The Athletic, because it focuses on a physio who had the unenviable task of dealing with a Roy Keane injury.
Yeah, I basically just interviewed Dave Feverett, who basically spent a number of years at Manchester United as their physio, and he actually left 2 days after the 1999 Champions League final. So lots of great stories from Dave. Basically, he was the guy who you know, helped put Roy Keane's knee back together and had the, you know, the task of sort of working with Keane, which is never straightforward, is it, as we all know. You know, to put his, you know, when he did his knee ligaments with the first tackle with Alfie Haaland, but also more than that, really, just the Ryan Giggs' hamstrings. And it was quite interesting just to sort of talk to people about that. You don't really get much of a chance to sort of hear their side of their work, really. And obviously they're sort of massively important. You know, this guy was talking about sort of fixing Ryan Giggs's car, you know, because basically his car seats were the sort of wrong angle, and it was affecting Ryan Giggs's hamstrings. So it was good to speak to him. He then went to Blackburn, spent a long time there, obviously a bit different to Man United, but lots of great stories from him.
Excellent. TheAthletic.com/ForestPod, the place to go to sign up for just £1 a week if you're not currently a subscriber. Danny, thanks so much for joining us today. We'll speak to you again soon.
No problem.
Well, that's just about it for this week. Paul, you've got a new piece up for Athletic subscribers to read on Frank Clark, somebody who means a lot to Forest supporters of various generations.
Yeah, it's part of our What It's Like To series, and in his case it's what it's like to play for, manage and be chairman of a football club. And there's lots of great stories in there from Frank, including how Fawaz Al Hassawi sacked him by letter 1 minute and then offered him the opportunity to run the club a year later. So lots of colourful tales about winning the European Cup, about leading Forest back into Europe as manager, and just comes through as being a thoroughly nice man, which is what he basically is.
Nick, that Forest team that he managed and took into Europe, I know it was for me, I'm guessing for you, one of your favourite vintages of Forest.
Yeah, I mean, that it was one of the last times that Forest were kind of genuinely good, and not just kind of genuinely good for Forest. I think as much as anything, them along with the sort of 2002-03 side that got to the playoffs, so that if nothing else, the most likable Forest team I think I've ever supported. You know, Bahenan and Brian Roy, and you know, Steve Stone, and of course Stan Collymore. They were just a pleasure to watch, and they were a team that for even though Forest have been one of the bigger teams in the Championship and League One in the last sort of 20 years, there's always been a sort of bit of an inferiority complex with Forest, where we think we are, you know, not as good as everyone else. Well, that's sort of for me certainly, but I remember at that time we sort of feeling like we genuinely belonged at the, you know, at the top of the Premier League, which we were. Obviously finished third and then got into Europe, and it was just a really exciting time to be a Forest fan, particularly for someone of, you know, of my age, as I was sort of, you know, 12, 13 at the time. It was thrilling, and I wish we've had more years like that since.
Yeah, don't we all? Nick, what have you got in the pipeline? I know podcasts have been taking up a lot of your time recently.
Yeah, so I've recently been working on a podcast about Neymar's transfer to from Barcelona to PSG, which is arguably even more significant than Kevin Campbell going to Trabzonspor in the sort of after effects and ripple effects that it had. Yeah, it's a three-part podcast series. It's called Beyond the Headline, Neymar, the Transfer That Changed the World. And it's about how not only was Neymar's transfer the most expensive of all time by a very, very long way, but how it essentially contributed to the current chaos at Barcelona, made PSG into a kind of serious challenger at the sort of very top of European football, and basically allowed Liverpool to buy the team that has, you know, won the Champions League, the World Club Cup, and the Premier League. So that should be out next week. It's called Beyond the Headline. Search for it in all your favourite pod providers, and you can also listen to it on The Athletic.
Yeah, remember, all The Athletic's podcasts are free to listen to. And if you listen to it via the website or the app, you get the ads removed as well. And if you want to read Paul's pieces and you're not currently a subscriber, you can head to theathletic.com/forestpod to sign up for just £1 a week. Thanks to Daniel Taylor for joining us earlier. Also to Paul and Nick and producer Adonis, but mainly to you, listener. We'll catch up again next week. For now, though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.